Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. This episode is a rebroadcast of a condensed Thursday night talk, The Race Beat, on the true history of Thanksgiving in the U.S. To hear the full version of this Thursday night talk, go to khsu.org. The U.S. is preparing for the Thanksgiving holiday this week. The holiday is commemorated by family gatherings centered around a feast of turkey, ham, stuffing, and cranberry sauce. We also think of the image of happy pilgrims and Indians coming together for the first big feast. But what about the rest of the story? The historical facts versus the Mayflower myths. Joining me today is Kutcha Rissenling Baldy. Kutcha is an assistant professor of Native American Studies here at Humboldt State. Most recently, Kutcha and I co-hosted a special Thursday night talk with the Indigenous Voices Forum, Columbus, Doctrine of Discovery, and Indigenous Peoples' Rights for HSU's Indigenous Peoples Week. We are going to separate the fact from the fiction of the atrocious actions of Christopher Columbus. We'll discuss the true story of Thanksgiving, or as Kutcha called it on her Facebook page, Thanks-taking. Kutcha, welcome.
Hi, Lorna.
So, I don't know where to begin with the story of Thanksgiving. Why don't you start us off, Kutcha?
It's really interesting because there's not really a clean way to tell this story. There's all kinds of intrigue and multiple ways that these things come about. Most people, when they think of the first Thanksgiving, what they're thinking about are the pilgrims and landing on Plymouth Rock in the sort of 1600s. And that really has to do with the partnership that the pilgrims develop with the local area native people who are known as the Wampanoag. And a lot of people don't know their names, don't know who they are. That we don't usually think of like pilgrims and Indians, but really it was a group of people. They're called the Wampanoag people. And what people say about the Wampanoag is what you're really talking about when you're talking about the first Thanksgiving is the establishment of a treaty between the pilgrims and the Wampanoag people about how they're going to live together. How are they going to be people who are living in the same space? And that's really what this is sort of all about, is this moment where they're sort of establishing a relationship together. And that relationship gets established very early, but it also very quickly becomes a strained relationship between people because of the way that the pilgrims sort of don't respect that relationship. The main guy that you're talking about from the Wampanoag people who are doing this is a guy that they called Massasoit. And he is the leader of the tribe at the time, and he kind of establishes relationships with the pilgrims. That's kind of what we're basing this story on. But there's also like so much more that if you go around Thanksgiving is actually really about how this becomes a holiday for us and how this becomes the thing that we learn about in schools.
Wasn't there, now I know I didn't learn this in school, but wasn't there also an association with English explorers who actually took natives from this region on a ship as slaves?
Yes, and so one of the people who was very involved in creating this alliance between the Wampanoag people and then the pilgrims is a guy by the name of Squanto. And a lot of people know him. Actually, they made like a cartoon about him. Squanto. But what is interesting about Squanto is he actually is from another area, and he is kidnapped as a child and sold into slavery. And so they take him from his group of people. They sell him into slavery. He actually lives for a long time with the people that they sold him to, and they teach him English. And he escapes from them and comes back to his people. But what he discovers is that most of his people had died while he was gone. And so he then goes to live with the Wampanoag, who take him in. And when the pilgrims come, they're like, you speak English. You should go talk to these people. And at this time, the pilgrims are having kind of a hard time settling in. And so he shows up and he actually teaches them how to plant corn, and he talks to them and he says, hey, we can sort of work this out, and I have these people that can work with you. And the pilgrims are funny. Like, I've actually read a lot of historians looking through like pilgrims' writings about this time, and they say that the pilgrims are, they're really coming over here with ideas about native people that they had gotten from stories that explorers had told of like far off lands full of like these giant people who were just savage and would kill you, who could throw a tomahawk from a mile away and like hit you between the eyes. And because travelers want to make the Americas seem very dangerous, because then people want to go and pay the money to talk to them and listen to their stories. So the pilgrims come with all these ideas about who these native people are, and they get very scared because they don't know the land, they don't know the place, they don't know how to build anything, they don't know like what's going on. And they refuse to even talk to anyone. And for the first like 3 months that they're there, the native people won't come and talk to them. They sort of stay away and sort of try to see like, what are you doing here? Like, what are you trying to do? And part of that is because there was this history of kidnapping people and selling them into slavery, of introducing smallpox, of killing people and massacring them. And so they're like, we have to see what you're all about before we actually show up. And this actually sets up that whole story of the pilgrims don't quite know how to live here. And so they start to get very scared. They don't have enough food. And then Squanto shows up. He speaks English, and that he's able to sort of show them how to plant corn. And then he buffers between Massasoit and the Wampanoag people to kind of say, let's create some kind of alliance that we can all come together and figure out how to live here in a way that we can all sort of like thrive and be here.
So without Squanto's help, what would have happened?
I mean, who knows, right? Because I think what some people say is the pilgrims were very afraid. They were always very afraid of native people. And even when they brokered this agreement with Massasoit, they were still really afraid of them, that at any moment they could sort of like turn around and destroy them, right? So to be reminded of the vulnerability of pilgrims at this time, it's not like they show up like the conquering heroes of this land. They sort of show up like, we're very afraid of what's going on. We don't know how we're going to survive. And they need help. And the native people show up to help. They don't show up to like destroy them. They show up to help and then say, we need to figure out how we're going to work in this situation. And part of that was because all of the things that had been going on before that, the kidnapping and putting them into slavery, the sort of like coming in for massacres, the disease had made a lot of native populations even more vulnerable than they would have been. And so they needed people to ally with.
So when did the story go south then? When it sounds like the pilgrims were kind of meek and passive people and they really needed the help of Squanto at this time. So when did it go south?
Well, so they make this agreement with the Wampanoag, with Massasoit, and they say, you know, what we'll do is we'll protect you and you protect us, and we won't just take over everything, and we are here as partners. They then, after Squanto teaches them to plant corn, they have a big celebration because they're like, look, we're not going to die of starvation. And they said what happened was is they actually start like shooting guns and cannons because they're so excited that, oh, we finally figured out how to live here and we're going to not die. And so they start shooting everything. And the Wampanoag are listening to this from far away and they're like, what is happening over there? And are these people now stabbing us in the back? Are they trying to do what these other people have done? And they get very suspicious. So they actually create a party of Wampanoag people, including Massasoit, to show up and say, what's going on here? And the pilgrims try to say, well, we're celebrating our harvest. We're celebrating this thing. But they didn't invite the Wampanoag to that celebration. The Wampanoag showed up because they're shooting all these guns in the air, calling attention to themselves. So the Wampanoag actually weren't invited to celebrate this harvest or this Thanksgiving.
They crashed the party.
They came and they were like, we don't quite believe what you're telling us here. We actually think you're going to turn around and do something by shooting everybody. So we don't really believe you. So they decide that they're going to stay. They're like, we're going to stay here. And there's, I think what they say is there's like 90 of them and there's only like 30 pilgrims at this period of time. And so the pilgrims, of course, get really freaked out because all these Indians are like camping around the area trying to figure out what's going on. So they don't invite them to come and have a feast because they're kind of a little bit like scared of them. But Massasoit, he looks around and says, well, they're eating and they're celebrating and we do that too. Like we celebrate when something good happens and we feed people and we can't just show up without anything. So he actually sends out a bunch of his people to go and they hunt deer and they bring back a bunch of deer. And they're like, we can contribute to your feast and be a part of this. And so they actually stay there with them. And what they say is there's like this kind of politeness from the pilgrims where they're like, well, okay, you can stay and we'll try to be nice to you. But they're also like really scared about if something could go wrong. And that's kind of what some people trace back to the first Thanksgiving is this moment where they're not invited. They come because they're kind of convinced that something is up and they have to make sure that these people aren't breaking their agreements with them. They stay, they bring food, and then everybody kind of eats together.
So in my research and preparing for this show, I found a site and they debunked 6 key things in this. So can we go through them a little bit? Like, so, and this goes to what you were just saying, the romanticized story that we hear in school when we're making our turkeys out of our hands and, you know, the feathers and the Thanksgiving bird and the whole bit. We learn that the Native Americans and the Pilgrims came together to give thanks. So that really didn't happen that way.
No, not at all. And what's interesting is after that first sort of like Thanksgiving celebration, things start to go downhill very quickly between the Pilgrims and the Wampanoag, in part actually because Squanto and Massasoit get into like a fight over who's going to be in charge. And Squanto tries to be in charge and Massasoit's like, you're not in charge, I'm in charge. And they're both going behind each other's backs to deal with the Pilgrims to figure out who's going to be in charge. And Massasoit gets really upset about that. And so he says, if you're going to keep talking behind my back with Squanto, then I'm out of this agreement. And so he pulls out of trade with the Pilgrims because he's like, that seems to be your dude. Squanto seems to be your guy. So you stay with him, but we're out of this agreement because of that.
So is Squanto ever viewed as a traitor or to his own people?
Some people say he kind of dies under mysterious circumstances, right? He turns up dead, but there's not really a whole thing about how. So some people think he was actually assassinated because of that, but other people are like, no, it's because he's dealing with people who will, at the drop of a hat, get rid of you if they think you're getting in the way. So they don't know exactly who, but there's like this intrigue. And what happens because of that is Massasoit shows back up and he's like, well, do you want to reestablish trade with me now that you don't have this other guy, right? And he continues to get really mad about what they're doing, right? So he sort of ends trade with them and he's like, forget you guys. But then he gets really sick, and there's all these stories about how they send word to the Pilgrims that Massasoit's very sick, and one guy who was a friend of his, Edward Winslow, he decides to go out and see him because he's like, I think he's going to die. And he shows up, and he starts giving him medicine and trying to heal him. He, like, stays with him, and Massasoit gets better. And after Winslow helps him, then Massasoit's like, okay, well, we're going to become partners again. We're going to be people that work together again because you had come to my bedside and now I'm better. But at that time, because of everything that had been happening with like Squanto and then all the things that the Pilgrims were starting to do by like expanding where they were, Massasoit's own people came to him and were saying, don't do this. Don't reestablish trade with them. Don't trust them. Don't do this. Like, our advice to you is that this is not going to end well. And it ends up not ending well. And people say that they wonder if, there's no way to know, but they wonder if there is a regret on the side of Massasoit for everything that he had tried to do to establish this relationship, because in the end, they end up really sort of like trying to destroy this group of people.
This is a saga.
You know, it really is.
An unfolding.
I already told you about his son and like how he declares war against them. Like, it just keeps going on and on.
And when you spoke of Squanto and possible betrayal, all I could think of is the original Snitches Get Stitches. Or mysterious death in this case. Wow. So the other fallacy that is debunked here is Native Americans and Pilgrims, and this is the word of from the site, they were besties. Didn't sound like they were like real tight with each other.
No, it was always very tentative. And part of that was, again, because these stories they hear, they can't really, in their mind, Native people are savage, and that's the only way they really ever thought of them. And so they don't really ever create what is a real bond or relationship. And the difference is I think Native people come into these discussions with this idea that they're creating the same kinds of bonds and relationship that they were doing in their confederacies at the time, which is like, we are now becoming like kin, like family, and our relationship goes on forever. And so when we enter into this, we're taking it very seriously, and we're not doing that lightly. And the Pilgrims are entering into it as like, this is good for now, but we're kind of like ultimately very scared of you guys and we don't really trust you. And we ultimately think that you are at the very core, like a savage group of people, not even being able to see Massasoit as the leader of a confederacy of people or a government or all the things that they're doing to sort of help them, but instead like fundamentally believe that he's savage at his very core.
So these group of natives have been in this area for centuries. They've sustained life. They have found ways to have sustenance. They have crops. They have hunting methods. They're civilized, but they're viewed as savages.
And they had watched as these people had come in and really done very savage things to their people. And still they would yet think, how do we form a relationship rather than judge you based on all the actions of other people? So people had been coming into this area for a number of years at this point and, you know, really starting like a slave trade of Indian people, kidnapping them, selling them into slavery. You had the Jamestown colony, which was like established before the Plymouth colony. And I mean, that was run by like John Smith and like the whole Pocahontas thing. And really like Jamestown is a really crazy story because they come in and get established. They develop a relationship in the same way with the people of that area who were the Powhatan people. And that's sort of Pocahontas's people. And there's all these things about their relationship. And then in the end, that relationship falls apart because of what they do to Pocahontas. And they end up having this period they call the starving time after that because they don't have Indians to help them anymore because Indians said, we're done helping you. What you have done to our people, we're done. And they then go into the starving time. And then the Jamestown colony goes cannibal during this one winter. They did this study a couple of years ago where they showed like these bones that they had found of this one girl from the Jamestown colony. It was very obvious that she had been butchered and like that they had taken the meat off of her. They had also like they said, to try to get every part of the meat on her body. Like they could tell the way that they were cutting against the bones, right? So all of that, and that's like very close to where the pilgrims then land, and it's like the Wampanoag. And there's no way that the Wampanoag wouldn't know what was going on in Jamestown. And all of that, and they still walk up like, okay, let's deal with this. Let's try to figure out what we're going to do with this agreement.
You know, when I see another human, when I see you, I don't see meat. So the term savage, I think it's applied to the wrong group of people in this story.
I think so, too. I think that happens a lot. I think making Native people seem savage or turning them into savages, it sort of justifies then what they think they want to do in the area, right? Because we can do all these things because they're not good people, they're savage people. And they can break all these agreements because they're not real people, they're savage people. And they're making like real agreements with people, treaty agreements that were negotiated, like sit down negotiations. It's not like a handshake or an exchange of beads like sometimes we hear. It's like an actual sit down negotiation. It's very formal, it's very ceremonial. And then yet to turn around and be able to just sort of forget that that even happened or pretend like it didn't.
You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women on KHSU. My name is Lorna Bryant, and I'm speaking with Humboldt State University Professor Kutcha Risling-Baldy. This episode is a rebroadcast of a condensed Thursday night talk, The Race Beat, on the true history of Thanksgiving in the U.S. Kutcha, you mentioned that when the natives crashed the party, they didn't bring a turkey. They brought venison.
Yes.
So what were some of the other foods that were at this feast?
Well, a lot of it's sort of like educated guesses that are done by historians. They said very likely eels were there, corn, clams actually were a big sort of feasting kind of thing that people used. And they said there's some evidence that there could have been like what they called fowl, but not necessarily like a turkey, but sort of like different types of birds that were hunted at the time. So really it's sort of like the things that were of the area.
When you said eel, that was really surprising to me. Is there a cultural significance to the eel? I know there is some connection with eel here.
Yeah, here in this area. I don't know for sure. I mean, I'm sure the Wampanoag had some. They're on the coast, and so you're really talking about like a coastal group of people, and they're surviving off of things from the coast, but also, again, very likely they're epistemological beliefs, the way they see the world, are built around the things that they're interacting with.
So is eel significant, or just indicative of the region?
I think it could be both.
Okay.
Indicative of the region, but also significant probably to some of their older stories and the ways that they interact with like the land that they live on.
Okay. What type of, we've talked about some of the meats, what about some of the other items that were likely served during this feast?
They're talking about corn and like roots, like different kinds of roots or root vegetables. That's really all I can recall, like off the top of my head.
So let's go back to this celebration. It feels like a soap opera, like you mentioned earlier. What happened next? So this meal was formed after the natives came unexpectedly. What happened after that?
And then sort of the falling out with Squanto. And then Massasoit, he gets sick and he reestablishes relationships with them against the advice of his own people. And then he passes away. And his son actually becomes sort of the next, what they call the sachem, the sort of head of the tribe. And his name was Metacom, but the pilgrims called him King Philip. And that was sort of their name for him, was King Philip.
They Europeanized
him?
Yeah,
because to them, like, they're trying to find ways that these things are like what they know. And so they're like, well, that's your king. That's your king. And so that's King Philip, right? And what was interesting about Metacom or King Philip is that he had grown up always having the pilgrims there. So his world is very different than the world of his father. But he was also very clear that he did not trust them and he did not like what they had done to his people. He didn't like what they were doing to his lands. He made a speech where he talked about, I'm going to fight for this place and I'm not going to live in a place where I'm losing my home and my space. Like at one point he was giving a speech about who Massasoit was and he was like, you know, the pilgrims forget. They pretend like we are not a significant part of how they were able to be here. We're not a significant part of their history. But he says, like, my father was the father of the pilgrims. Like, my father is the father of who they became. They are not grateful to him. They sort of, like, pushed him aside at the end of his life. And so in doing that, you're talking about him sort of noticing this building conflict between him and the pilgrims. He's told by the English that he has to give up his arms, that he has to voluntarily give up his land, and that if he does that, then there won't be war. There won't be like any sort of massacring or destruction. He's having none of it. He's like, no, like we've given you guys so much and you keep taking and taking and we're not moving. Like this is our land and you made this agreement. So there's a big war that starts because of that. They call it King Philip's War. They say it's like the bloodiest war that has ever happened on American soil. And I think it was like 9,000 people died during this war. So,
and at that time, that's significant.
That's a significant number because there weren't that many English people here yet. And they're also, you know, you're talking about the Wampanoag people who are at that time, like their numbers had been reduced because of the things that were going on. So it's an incredibly bloody war. And one of the things that happens is one of the native people who were working with the English turns up dead. And Metacom's soldiers are tried and hung for that. So three of his soldiers get killed for that. Then that is sort of like for him, that's the end of the line. He's like, that's it. We're just going into war. Like, because you guys aren't listening. You aren't trying to do this in like a good way. And they fight for a very long time. People say it's very violent. It's a lot of showing up. They would set whole towns on fire and they would really fight because King Philip was saying, this is what we have to do, or they're just going to get rid of all of us. Like they're going to attack all of us. So from the period of time where the pilgrims are creating this partnership, this kinship with Massasoit to Massasoit's own son, who sees that that's not ever going to be the case, he's fighting a war against them. Like at a point he agrees, like we'll call a truce. They ask him to show up and he shows up to a town and they're like, all right, if you agree, we will treat you fairly. We won't just kill you or hurt you. And so they all show up and agree to surrender so that they can end the war. And what they end up doing is they end up taking all the natives who showed up to surrender and selling them into slavery. And this is where King Philip goes, see, you cannot be trusted. There's no way that I can ever trust you again. And then that sets off a whole nother set of like battles on his part.
Wow. Well, this is all fascinating. Then what happened?
Oh my gosh. So King Philip is fighting his war, refusing to give up. He ends up, they said, that he ends up getting killed in a swamp. And sadly, what happens to him is when the English find him because he has been killed in this battle, they actually leave him unburied and they behead him. to them, they have just won this great war, and they really treat him like with a lot of disrespect.
Savage.
And they cut his head off, and then they leave his body there. And then his head actually gets sent to Plymouth, where the Pilgrims landed, the colony, and it gets put on display. For 20 years, it's displayed in Plymouth on a stake, because they're sort of like making him into this trophy. And people, you know, could see this in public. And this, again, this is like display of power, but at the same time, you're kind of like, geez.
Savage.
Yeah. And so he gets displayed for 20 years. But the interesting thing about that is that when they cut his head off and they bring him back and they put his head on the stake and they put him on display, they actually have another celebration for the end of this war. And they call that another Thanksgiving. So they're like, we're having another Thanksgiving celebration of the end of this war. And so really what you're talking about is this continuing practice of saying we're celebrating something that happened. But the terminology, the idea of like this feast around the end of this war with these Indian people, and then treating them in this way and then calling it like a Thanksgiving celebration.
Listening to this, it makes it a little difficult for me to recognize this as one of my favorite holidays. I feel a little guilty honoring this holiday now. How do I resolve that? How do I deal with that?
Part of it is learning as much as you can about these things and then understanding that all of this history feeds into the contemporary issues that Native people face, right?
The one thing that I enjoy about Thanksgiving more than the food, more than the day off from work, is my family coming together and giving thanks. We would generally have 3 or 4 generations in the home, and we would all take the time to say what we were thankful for and how we were thankful for each other in some way. That part made Thanksgiving my favorite family tradition and favorite holiday. So I guess that will be my resolve if I focus on the thankfulness.
And I would put a plug in too for taking a moment, because we all know that this meal, this time for people right now, is tied to this story we learn of the Pilgrims and the Indians. But take a real moment if you can and learn the names, right? Learn Wampanoag, learn Massasoit, learn Metacom, like learn names, teach yourself something. If I'm going to at least have this holiday, like I'm going to take at least this day to acknowledge the Native peoples of the area that I'm from, like here in Arcata, that we are on Wiat land. These are Wiat people. And to remind ourselves that we should not forget that the things that we are struggling for today very much are informed by the things from history, and that we have a responsibility to that if we're going to move forward and do anything.
You have been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Lorna Bryant. I've been speaking with HSU professor Kutcha Wrestling Baldy. This episode is a rebroadcast of a condensed Thursday night talk, The Race Beat, on the true history of Thanksgiving in the U.S. To hear the full version of this Thursday night talk, go to khsu.org. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's editor, Katie Whiteside, and our entire Through the Eyes of Women team. You can listen to this show again at any time at Through the Eyes of Women's blog at khsuwomen.com. Join us again at 1:30 next Monday here on KHSU.